powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know, Curtis, for the last couple Seahawks games, with the exception of that win over the Jags, sometimes, you know, I turn to you and I just go, hey, can I get a vibe check? And for instance, on Monday, I said, Curtis, can I get a vibe check? And you said,
It's all bad.
Now, usually we do vibe checks for the Seahawks, but right now, Curtis, can I get just like a Seattle sports vibe check?
It continues to be bad.
So if you're a Sounders fan, congratulations. You're probably like, I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Everyone's complaining about this. I don't understand. I don't get it. If you watch multiple teams here, it's not great right now. Both major universities are without their head football coach. They fired their head football coach. You're going to see an Apple Cup where neither Nick Rolovich nor Jimmy Lake are coaching up those teams. And we don't know what the next steps are for these programs outside of find a new head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Men's hoops for UW already off to a pretty abysmal start after a pretty abysmal year. Who knows what's going to happen there? Wazoo, at least at times, has been kind of fun to watch. Oh, congratulations if you're a Gonzaga fan. Great start for you. You know what I mean? If you're a fan of just like a specific team, you're feeling great. If you're watching the Seahawks too, you're really bummed about a 3-win Seahawks team that keeps getting some bad luck, most recently with Chris Carson not returning to practice. But Seattle got an expansion team. You got the Kraken here, so that's really cool. That's really exciting. The problem is, Curtis, can I get a vibe check on the Kraken?
Boy, also bad.
Okay, so here's what I'm thinking, guys. I think that we need to make potentially a sacrifice. Now, and this is very dramatic, and this is, I know that, you know, this is a little weird, but I think this might actually be needed. I think we need to make a sacrifice.
So you're saying that what's going on right now is just pure bad juju,
yes,
in this town,
that
needs to change by some sort of sacrifice of some kind.
I'm saying it's a little weird.
Or a cleansing to
look
get this thing back on track.
I was on with our sister station out in Arizona, Marotta and Bickley and Marotta. And they were like, hey, so 12 since 12, how are Seahawks fans reacting? And I was like, But then I said, you know what? To be honest with you guys, when I joined you guys, I was hearing a Phoenix Suns update and like, look, I know the Diamondbacks are trash, but like in Seattle, like if you're a Storm or Sounders fan, shout out to those franchises. They've been fantastic. They've been stellar. But like the Seahawks, they've been winning for 10 years and now they're pretty bad. They're really struggling. The Mariners haven't made the playoffs in 20 years. You don't have an NBA team because the NBA stole it. I know that we're wanting to look to like specific people who stole it, but the NBA let it happen. And I'm so mad at you for that, but there's no NBA team here, SonicsCon. We just saw the city get a Kraken team, and that's really exciting. That's still really exciting. The novelty is not worn off. But they're a lot worse than we thought they'd be, and that's okay. But it doesn't, you know, make it as fun.
No, it doesn't.
I don't blame people for being a little burnt out sometimes.
Well, I don't blame them, but I do think it's important that if we are going to go with something like a sacrifice of some kind, we need to figure out what that's going to be. I nominate Russell Wilson's pin that got pulled out of his finger. I think that would be appropriate. Someone said that they have an old Percy Harvin jersey that we could use.
Okay.
Just send in your suggestions. I think that would
be... what you're willing to sacrifice, because, guys, I think it's just gotten to a point where we're going to need a little bit more. We're going to need more than just having conversations about, like, oh, let's hope this guy can get back. I think we got to take it into our own hands. We got to burn some sage. I'm going to go ahead and start a dumpster fire out in the parking lot, and I'll just take suggestions for what I should throw in it. I know we've got some film reels downstairs. Taylor, I assume that's fine if I go ahead and throw those in the dumpster fire.
I agree with you on that. But the one thing that I am hoping is that here in, you know, a matter of a week or a couple days or any time now, that we start to hear the Mariners start to make some moves, and that is the one thing that you're definitely holding on to, that, you know, after this season that they had this last year in 2021, that they'll be able to continue to keep building off of that and be able to ride the wave of the momentum that they created there. But I think that when you're talking about the Seahawks, you're talking about the Kraken, you're looking at UW, you know, you're looking at a lot of different things. The common denominator, in my opinion, versus successful, unsuccessful, is it comes down to your identity.
Can I throw in at least one good thing? Because I do want to talk about identity. I will say, right now, for a lot of these franchises, you're feeling kind of like, man, can I get a break with some of this? I will say, at the very least, every franchise here is in motion. And a lot of them feel in an upward trajectory, like the Mariners, for instance. And the Seahawks have been successful for a decade. You know what I mean? Like, there's at least movement on the horizon where it's like, it suddenly becomes interesting. Like, which way are they going to go?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, there's like, storylines for days. There's no doubt about that.
To me, it's fascinating. It's like, well, wait a minute. You can get some really exciting things happening here. So at the very least, they are things in movement.
Yeah, there are things in movement, and we'll see. I mean, the Seahawks, they still have their playoff hopes alive right now, and this game against the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll get into that. We've got a huge, you know, preview, 2-hour preview with Dave Wyman and the huddle coming up, you know, later today. But I think that when you talk about some people sending in some good stuff, Malik McDowell rookie card. I think that's a very good thing that you could use for sacrifice. Someone said throw in the current Seahawks playbook, offensive playbook, start from scratch. Okay, all right, sure.
Someone said, what about dumping Brian? I don't think that that's going to change anything. We're going strong.
I mean, he's not even on Earth at the moment.
Yeah, that's
how can he
really
be held responsible
to bring him into this? He's done nothing.
Definitely can't be held responsible. But coming back to the idea of identity, you look at the Kraken, for example. Who are they? We thought we knew who they were going to be. Turned out that their identity and what they were building as a hockey team has just not worked out whatsoever. Is that guys just not being played? Is that a product of guys not playing together and still not understanding how to play together well? Is it a bunch of mistakes that they continue to keep making, like turnovers and costly errors in that fashion that have continued to keep putting them behind the eight ball? But whatever it is, their identity is not clear and it is not shown, and you cannot point to them and say, I know who, what they want to be. The Seattle Seahawks, especially offensively, you look at it and say the same exact thing. I know what they want to be, kind of. They're kind of pulled and stretched in different directions, but I have no idea who they actually are. I mean, even think about it defensively. They're getting it done on the back end with their pass defense, but they are not a group that rushes the passer tremendously well. They're still 28th, 29th in pass rush percentage, in sack percentage, and in sacks total. So they're not getting it done in the traditional Pete Carroll way in terms of his identity and what he wants his defense to be from top to bottom. So you factor all those in, and I think that identity and living up to that identity, executing your philosophy, is such a huge part of the equation for these teams to be successful. It doesn't matter if you've been successful for 10 years, whether you're a franchise that's starting out new, that principle remains the same in sports. No matter what it is, sticking to your philosophy, sticking to your identity, and being able to, you know, in hard times and in good times, you could point to that and say, this is what we're doing and how we're trying to stay true to our philosophy.
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation because it works for quite a few teams here, which I really like about it, which is like one of those important principles of sports teams. And when you look at, I know I started with a joke about making a sacrifice. I'm not joking. But it is one of the common denominators when you talk about just building a team, no matter the sport, regardless of sport, knowing who you are. And you're right in that some of these teams, it's been lacking. Now, the Mariners are an example of a team that I think knows who they want to be. They've just finally got a great farm system and finally willing to spend some money. You know what I mean? Like, they're more like at the start of filling in the gaps of the roles that they know they want.
Right. They are. And it is fascinating to see that, Stacey, and to look at it and also for them to get to the next phase of it, right? I think that they've honed in on some of the identity and some of the focal pieces of focal points of what they want to be and how they want to be in terms of, you know, Scott Service and how he talks about controlling the zone and how they focus on the defensive aspect of playing the game. But now taking that next step from, all right, we're laying the foundation to now becoming a true playoff contender. Well, where is that identity going to be? Where is it going to come from, and how do they get there? You know, Jerry DePoto and this front office are still establishing all of that.
You know what I'll say going back to the Seahawks, and this is a semi-related. It feels like I know who Russell Wilson wants to be. I know what kind of team Pete Carroll wants. And I know what version of the Seahawks has been most successful. And it doesn't really feel like they are truly any of those three things.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It doesn't feel like they've hit on any of that. And that's part of the frustration that I have when it comes to the Seahawks, because I don't think that they have honed in on one thing. Have they mutually agreed upon one thing? I just believe that everybody's
winning,
just kind
of... The concept of winning.
The concept of winning, sure, but how do you win? You can't win if you're in between. If you're going to dip your toe in to each aspect of a certain philosophy or a style of play and say, I'm just going to dip my toe in and just see how the water feels, and ooh, if it's too cold, I'm going to back out of it really quickly. You got to go all in, head first, and that's why when Pete Carroll and John Schneider showed up to begin with, they were able to turn things around, one, because of great drafting and identifying the right talent and acquisition. But the other part was they were very clear in their vision as to who they were going to be, how they were going to win, how they were going to approach free agency, how they were going to treat their players. X's and O's, push comes to shove, this is what we're going to live and die with. And at this point in time, I don't know what that is for this team. And that is a big reason why, outside of injuries with Russell Wilson and Chris Carson, which is a big major factor, by the way. Outside of that, I don't know clearly what the identity of this team is now and also of the future. But if you're Pete Carroll, if you're this group trying to find that identity, if you're Shane Waldron, Russell Wilson, you're trying to find that identity in a hurry starting this Sunday, because if you want any chance of getting to the playoffs, you have to win this game against the Arizona Cardinals.
One of the teams I mentioned here, University of Washington, looking for their new head football coach. We're going to talk to ESPN football writer Adam Rittenberg in about 15 minutes about who could be an option for them there. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray spoke to the media yesterday. Here's what he had to say about how his ankle's feeling.
I'm like I said last week, I've made crazy progress. I'm way further along than I thought I would be. I think, like Coach said, I'm pretty close.
Getting closer to a return, so maybe he's available on Sunday. What's the real headline?
This weekend can go one of two ways, Jake. The Seahawks lose to a healthy Kyler Murray, or the Seahawks lose to an injured Kyler Murray.
Oh, come on.
It was a funny joke.
I don't
now,
like it
now,
at all.
Now, what I was going to say is, and in related news, Seahawks looking to acquire KJ Wright in a trade, and it was a little abstract, but I said it because the Seahawks defensively have improved so much. They have done so many of the right things over the last couple weeks, including what might have been their best game of the season against one of the better offenses and better quarterbacks they've faced. And I don't care if Aaron Rodgers missed 10 days in quarantine. That was still a great Green Bay Packers team. But the one thing they've struggled with is containing the edge, is stopping screenplays, and Arizona has been pretty good there.
Yeah, they have been pretty good there, and that is something that is going to be a major challenge as well. And look, as you start to get better defensively, right, this is the beauty of it. You start to get better defensively, you start to really hone in on who you are and identifying the right things. Guess what? The weak points that you have start to really get pinpointed, and you're able to address them as they come. And you're able to do it more effectively. So you're not worried about pass rush, pass coverage. Does anybody know their assignment at all? Can we get any pressure on the quarterback? You're not worried about all these big picture things because those are starting to come together. Now you can really focus in on Jordan Brooks and Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner and the rest of that crew. We've got to get better at the screen game. And recognizing that and addressing that becomes a lot simpler. And I think that is a positive sign for this defense in terms of where they are at. So, yeah, you could point to it, and it's a frustration, and certainly the Green Bay Packers took advantage of it this last week. But they have also a lot of other things going for them and heading in the right direction, and I anticipate that they will improve and get better at that as the season progresses even further, and hopefully that they'll be better at it this Sunday against the Cards.
I'll say another thing they need to be better at this Sunday, and that would be getting into the end zone. Because defensively, I never thought I'd say this, but here we are in Week 11, and I am less concerned about what the defense is going to do against a pretty good Arizona Cardinals offense than I am about what the offense can do against the Arizona Cardinals defense, which is limiting opponents to 33% on third down. The Seahawks already struggling on third down. I don't like the meeting of these two forces.
Yeah, that that matchup doesn't sound too appealing, does it? And I am right there with you. The Seahawks offense against the Arizona Cardinals defense is more of the matchup that I am uneasy about, which is crazy to think about where we were before the season started and the conversations and the thought process about this group. And honestly, what it comes down to is, one, how are you going to approach and game plan this, and how are you going to avoid, to me, it's how are you going to avoid third downs? You could talk about getting yourself into better situations, better third down situations, and all of that is true.
Interception.
You cannot live, in third and six plus.
Yeah.
You can't do that and be successful with a group that's already struggling on third down. So you want to be third, five closer. But also, there's that aspect of, hey, what about being ultra aggressive on first and second down and being that success on first and second down? It doesn't mean necessarily pass, but just having very positive gains, run or pass, on first and second down could be all the difference as well.
Really quickly, someone texted in on the Mac and Jack's text line from the 425. For comparison purposes, what would you say are the identities of each of our three divisional rivals? That is a great question. Let's get back to that conversation at 11:45. I'm tabling it. Good question.
Headline rewrites.
Climate Pledge Arena, man. A place where goals go to die. The Kraken came out flat again last night. Could not overcome an early three-goal deficit in their 4-2 loss to the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, yeah, they got a couple of goals late.
No, that was fun.
Then they allowed the empty netter. What's the real headline?
Real headline is, how soon is too soon for a head coaching hot seat? I know that now is too soon. I know the
way
answer
too,
is too soon.
Soon.
I know it's too soon, but I'm saying it because I'm secretly, low-key, in the back of my mind, thinking, I get that you've got, I'm giving all the leniency in the world of, like, you've got a brand new team, guys that have been playing together for so little time in a sport where chemistry is so incredibly important. And not only that, but there's only so much a head coach can do when you've been given guys that you didn't necessarily draft, you know what I mean? Like you had limited choices of who to get, and this is a team that didn't have the expansion draft advantages of Vegas, and not only that, but had, because of that, a different goal than Vegas. The goal wasn't necessarily get a Stanley Cup this year, try to be competitive this year, get the best team this year.
Mm-hmm.
The goal was start building your team and start building towards something. So I understand all of that, but I think that there are times when I watch this team and think, I think this team is better than what we're seeing,
Given all of that, you would sure like to hope so. And I just don't think that all the experts out there evaluating this team, from the analytics crowd to just the hockey experts in general, looking at the Kraken and saying that this is a team that can legitimately make the playoffs. And we see kind of the formula of what Ron Francis is trying to create, and then not see it come to life at all so far this season has definitely been shocking. So, you know, there's still time. There's still plenty of time for them to continue to grow and develop, and we'll see how the rest of the season finishes out. But anybody that's sitting there telling you, be patient with these guys, all this, yeah, you can be patient, but you can also assess the team and say that this has not worked out for them at all in terms of the way that they've envisioned it to start this thing off. That is not being overly critical.
That's one of the
hardest parts about it. That is identifying the true aspect of what's happened this season.
Also, if they would have gotten just average goalie play over the first 15 games, they would probably have more than 4 wins at this point. Philip Grubauer, I mean, he was great last year in Colorado, leaving plenty of to be desired right now.
I feel like it is completely fair, and you are not being an ungrateful sports fan, to say, hey, why aren't the Kraken great at the thing they were supposed to be really good with? It's completely fair to ask that question and say, what's going on there? You know what I mean?
100%.
It's one thing if you're like, why aren't they scoring more goals? Well, you knew heading into the season they might struggle offensively. they were supposed to be great at goaltending and pretty solid defensively. It is completely fair to ask, like, why is this such a confusing team? Greg Wyshynski had his kind of like NHL, kind of like what's going on, a quick peek at the season, and had the Kraken as his most confounding team for that reason.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three. Get your 28-3 jokes ready, because Thursday Night Football tonight is a rematch of Super Bowl 51 between the Patriots and the Falcons. What's the real headline?
Oh, good. Because I had another joke for my headline. It wasn't a 28-3 joke, so that's
funny. No?
No, we're out of time, though. Don't forget, you can listen to us
on the
go.
Oh, we don't get to hear it?
Or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Yeah, no, we don't have, unfortunately, time. It was really original and good, though. So,
just like all the other 28-3 jokes.
Yep, correct. Yep. What's the latest with UW's head coaching search? That's next with Adam Rittenberg.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now to talk some college ball is Adam Rittenberg, ESPN senior writer. Adam, over the summer you had a column about a coaching football job showdown between Oregon and Washington. Washington came out victorious in that one, and lo and behold, there's now an open coaching position there. First of all, do you still see that as the better coaching position between the two? And then we'll get to some candidates next.
Yeah, you know, it's one that I've definitely thought a lot about since it went out, because it got strong reaction. Obviously, Oregon fans disagreed with me.
Right,
and they made
yeah.
some good points. And, you know, obviously, in terms of the two teams, Oregon is ahead of Washington substantially right now. So I still think there's a lot of positives with the Washington job and the right candidate. The urban location is a major plus. The facilities are a plus. I know Oregon's got great facilities as well, but there's more access to talent in Seattle than there ever will be in Eugene, and that's not really going to change. And so I think, you know, the Oregon job is a good job, but you need somebody really with Mario Cristobal's mentality to be successful there. Whereas I think at Washington, yeah, you need to recruit well. It's obviously a big reason why they made their coaching change, is recruiting is not going well. But there's also other things that you have in your favor at Washington that you don't necessarily have at Oregon.
You know, Adam, that's what makes this such a unique situation. So, you know, I was a recruit, you know, coming out of high school, that I was a hometown kid. And ended up not deciding to go to UW at the time because the program was struggling. But you just see the amount of top talent that is leaving the state, despite even in the Chris Peterson days and now with Jimmy Lake, that has been drastic. How does a coach come in there and really start to hone in the recruiting aspect of the University of Washington that has not been able to be taken care of, you know, for a number of years now?
Right, and that's going to be the main challenge for whoever they hire, is to reestablish themselves in Seattle as a place to be. I think the branding of the program needs to be looked at. You hear and see Oregon a lot more than you do Washington, just from a national perspective. Perhaps that's the case even regionally as well. So that's got to start changing. I think the money, which they have, I think they have money there, needs to start showing up behind the program, maybe in different elements as far as how they structure their recruiting office or where they put their funds in terms of graphics, in terms of video. A lot of teams in the Pac-12 have had to do this recently. USC had to make major upgrades to how they've recruited. So I think that's something to look at in this case at Washington, because there is a lot of great, there are a lot of great things to sell about that program, but I think the actual approach and true commitment to being a little bit more out in front of it and public about it maybe needs to be changed a little bit after a head coach who was great in Chris Peterson but really didn't like to do media and be out there. You know, Jimmy Lake was a little bit better in that way, but obviously did not connect either. So I think there's a deeper kind of studying of how they sell and brand their program that probably needs to be completed even now before they make this hire, and then certainly connect that with whoever they bring in to lead the program.
Hey, Adam, what are a couple names that you're personally tracking to see whether or not they're linked to this Huskies job?
Right, so there's kind of a group that's more regional, a group of five coaches, but I think in terms of hiring a sitting Power 5 coach, there's two that I was told, you know, yesterday that I think are going to be at least mentioned and probably courted. I don't know if they're going to have reciprocal interest in Washington, and that's Baylor head coach Dave Aranda and Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell. You know, I'm told that Chris Peterson, who's still very involved at Washington, really likes both of these coaches, and for good reason. I see a lot of similarities between both Aranda and Campbell and Peterson and their approaches. And, you know, Dave Aranda is probably one of the hottest coaches out there right now. Certainly could be on the list for USC. He's really the only candidate for that job who has direct ties to Southern California, having grown up, you know, east of L.A., went to college at Cal Lutheran. He's never coached in the Pac-12, but obviously connected to the West Coast. And then I really think Matt Campbell needs to make a move from Iowa State. You kind of has done what he can do there. It hasn't worked out well for him this season, but a guy that's really well-regarded in coaching circles, NFL circles even, and I think could bring an offense that would suit Washington and a different recruiting approach that I think would also connect well, not just with the top players in the Seattle area, but with players that he can develop, because that's been his MO for sure at Iowa State. And I think he could do that at an even higher level at a program like Washington.
Now, Adam, you mentioned the two bigger names that have been a part of the discussion for Washington. And I, you know, out of those two, my favorite personally is Matt Campbell for the reasons that you just said, the opportunity that he could change things from a high-level recruit standpoint to a lot of guys that go under the radar here, even locally in the Northwest. But what are some other names out there that you have linked to UW, and which names intrigue you the most in that next category?
Yeah, you know, I'm interested, Jake, in, you know, Kalani Sitake from BYU. Would he be on their radar? It makes a lot of sense for the guy who's had success here, especially the last 2 years. He brings a style that I think would connect well with the Washington fan base, given their history and their success under Peterson. They're a very physical team. They run the ball. And then he's also been a defensive-minded coach, at least in his own background, but he's hired some good offensive coordinators, including Jeff Grimes, who happens to be Baylor's offensive coordinator under Dave Aranda, and now Aaron Roderick, who's done a good job with a new quarterback in Jaren Hall this year. So I think that's, that's a name that I, would he fit at Washington? You know, does he want to go to Seattle after living in Provo, Utah? That's a question. And then a couple of guys in the Mountain West that I think are really interesting, you know, Jay Norvell at Nevada and Kalen DeBoer at Fresno State. Jay's a little bit more of an established guy in the sense that he was a longtime assistant in the Power Five, was the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, Nebraska, UCLA. He was in the NFL, in the Indianapolis Colts organization and the Oakland Raiders organization. Really a guy who was overdue to become a head coach and has maximized his chance at Nevada so far. So he's interesting to me, an offensive-minded guy. And then also, you know, Kalen, you know, kind of came up through the very bottom of college football in a sense, NAIA head coach, won three national titles at his alma mater, and then was at Eastern Michigan, Indiana, Fresno State, and came back to Fresno State as a head coach, and he's done a really good job, has a win over UCLA this year. And then certainly Justin Wilcox's name in the Pac-12 is getting mentioned. It doesn't have an exceptional record, but I think no program has been impacted more negatively by COVID than Cal, who had to have a game postponed last week and really never got on track. And Justin obviously was at UW as the former defensive coordinator under Steve Sarkisian.
You know, Adam, going back to, because there's a couple names that really stand out to me. DeBoer really intrigues me from Fresno State. He gives me a lot of Brandon Staley kind of vibes. But, you know, Kalani Sitake is a name that really stands out to me from his ties here from the West Coast. How much of that should be a factor for UW as they're looking at that from a recruiting aspect? You know, you talk about, Aranda, you talk about Matt Campbell. Do those guys, those types of guys that don't have that same level of ties here on the West Coast, recruiting-wise, do you think that those would still translate well as Sitake would?
I think they would, but I think Kalani certainly has some advantages, right? You know, where he's already located and the fact that he was He's been a defensive coordinator at two Pac-12 programs, Oregon State and Utah. I think, you know, the fact that Washington has an incredible tradition, as you guys know, of Polynesian players and, you know, being stars at that program, and they had never had a Polynesian head coach, like Kalani. So that makes him intriguing. So I think there's some elements of his profile that would give him an advantage if he is under consideration that perhaps Aranda and Campbell wouldn't, but I don't think those guys would struggle to adjust, especially Aranda having grown up in the LA area to being on the West Coast. I don't think that would be overly difficult for either one.
He is senior writer covering college football for ESPN, Adam Rittenberg. Follow him at ESPN Rittenberg if you aren't already. And if you are, make sure you check out his latest column on ESPN, ESPN Plus. It is about the college football coaching carousel. Coug fans, I know you're listening and you want to know more about that vacancy. Don't worry, Adam's got you covered with the latest on that stuff as well. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it, man.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, guys.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Coming up next, Jake's top five candidates for both UW and Wazoo head coaching vacancies. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Jake, you have some top five coaching candidates. Now, did you do for either... five for UW, five for Wazoo. I'm assuming you've got five that would work for either school, or maybe specifically one.
Yes, I do have five that would work for either school,
okay.
But I have some.
You have
that
some favorites.
I do
where
have.
It's like, this guy's a perfect fit for the Cougs.
Correct. I do believe that there are some guys that make a little bit more sense than others.
Let's hear them.
But I think that when you're talking about the overall status for each of these teams and what do they need, all of those kind of change as well. And, you know, I think that when you're talking about the Cougs, it really comes down to the fundamental principle of what exactly style do you want to go with? Because I've heard, you know, different people want to look for guys that obviously have ties to WSU. I've heard, hey, we want more stability. I want more stability in terms of a proven commodity and someone that would make a ton of sense for us in that way, or I want to continue to keep going down the air raid line. Okay, so you hear all those different things, and that's kind of trying to, you know, what I was trying to factor it all in as I was going down this list. Okay, but I still think that when you're going down the list, that there are some names that make just a ton of sense from putting all of that together. So number one, and this isn't necessarily number one to five in order of what I think.
One of the five.
This is one of the five. I think Graham Harrell makes a ton of sense, offensive coordinator at USC. Now, people laugh at that and say, okay, well, he hasn't been a head coach yet. He didn't necessarily light the world on fire at SC. But there was so much dysfunction at USC. I don't think you can pin it all on Graham Harrell and the fact that offense, they still put up points. They still did good things. But there was a lot of dysfunction that was there at SC just to begin with Clay Helton. And, you know, you're working with a coach, the head coach that was on the way out pretty much every single year, and they delayed that. So I think that Graham Harrell fits the profile of air raid, you know, spent time at WSU, was an assistant there with Mike Leach. And from what I do know is that he wants that job really, really badly.
That Graham Harrell wants,
yes,
the Washington job?
Or Washington State job.
Yeah.
Graham Harrell wants that job really, really badly. And so you have somebody that is excited, motivated, ready to embrace that part of it and brings an air raid system. And I think that they would recruit the state extremely well, as well as having their ties in Southern Cal and then obviously in Texas. So that one to me really stands out as a name that makes a ton of sense there. I really like Brett Brennan, the head coach out of San Jose State. I just think that he is a guy that really took a down and out San Jose State program and really turned them into a winner and a very respectable program. He's a young guy. He is very clear in his principles and identity. He's an offensive focused guy. And I do think that he could take that next step. And I do believe that his personality and everything would make a ton of sense for Washington State. Then you throw in another guy who has that has, you know, ties to WSU and fond memories everybody has of him, Alex Grinch, defensive coordinator from Oklahoma. This one is one that makes me a little leery, I'll be honest with you, just because, you know, at Oklahoma, he didn't necessarily light the world on fire defensively. But I do believe that having that experience and being able to be with a big-time program at Oklahoma, as well as his connections at WSU and having success, knowing what it's like to recruit at WSU and having success as a defense coordinator, that to me makes a lot of sense from that front. So those are three guys. Now I'm going to go with two, a little bit more. I'm going to go with one guy who's a little bit more experienced, and that is in terms of, you know, really cutting his teeth as a head coach who intrigues are in the coaching ranks. He's a rising star in terms of his approach. So that makes a ton of sense to me. And I really like that possibility. And then the last one I would say is Jay Norvell, from Nevada. He is an air raid guy. He is proven, NFL, college, really has done a great job at Nevada, you know, developing that program. And so those are my top five. Okay. There. And I really like them.
Run through the five names one more time. So people can, keep track in their mind or write them down or be like, I'm watching out for this guy.
Brett Brennan, which San Jose
State. I'm
just going
to say, which sounds like a fake name. It sounds like me inventing a boy.
Brett Brennan, Kalen DeBoer. Okay. Alex Grinch, Graham Harrell, okay, and then Jay Norvell.
What one do you like the most? Because you talked a lot about Satake.
I did, but that's Washington State.
Oh, you're looking at specifically Washington.
Yeah, Washington State.
Oh, I thought you were doing 5 feet. Okay.
Washington
okay.
State.
Wow,
that,
what a treat.
That to me is what stands out. So I think that if I were to pick, I think Jay Norvell makes a ton of sense in bringing stability and bring a guy who knows exactly who he is and what he wants to do. Graham Harrell, I think, is a splash hire that would bring a ton of energy to WSU and would make a lot of sense and bring a lot of intrigue and interest to WSU. So those would be guys that I am very, very intrigued by, okay, and it makes a ton of sense. Now, when it comes to Washington, I think obviously you have the names like Dave Arn. I always butcher this last name.
Aranda.
Dave Aranda. Thank you. Dave Aranda makes a ton of sense. I just don't think you get him ultimately. I think he goes to LSU or USC. Matt Campbell, to me, is number one on the list. He is the guy that I would heavily be going after, and somebody that when you're talking about this particular coaching search, if I'm UW, I'm doing everything humanly possible to try to make that happen. The other name that makes a lot of sense to me that I think would be a slam dunk if you were able to pull him away from BYU would be Kalani Sitake. I just think his recruiting ties here locally make a ton of sense. I think it adds to what they want to do.
And he's your personal kind of front runner.
Not necessarily.
He's one of your front runners.
He is somebody that I really, really like for the job, and I do believe it would be a great fit. But he's not a front runner because I do believe it's going to be really hard to pull him away from BYU. And you would have to make one heck of a recruiting pitch to him as to why UW would be the best landing spot.
So you're saying, I don't see how realistic it is. I really like him for the role, but don't see how realistic
yeah,
it is. I mean, more than the possibility.
I'll just say this. If UW is very serious about pursuing him, they absolutely could have a shot at him if they're willing to pay and they're, you know, and all that. And I think that is definitely a part of the equation. I don't think it would be hard because BYU just, as of right now, just doesn't pay their staff the same way that other Power 5 teams pay them. So I do believe that would be realistic. I just don't know how serious UW is going to be in terms of looking and pursuing at Kalani Sitake. I think Kalen DeBoer makes a ton of sense for UW as well. Justin Wilcox, just that immediate connection from UW and Chris Peterson, okay, adds up. And then you add, I think the wild card there is Chip Kelly. If Chip Kelly wanted to leave Westwood and come up to UW and try to establish something up there, obviously the intrigue would be very high, and I the recruiting aspect to UW I think would be a fairly easy transition for Chip Kelly.
All right. And those are your top five head coaching candidates, both for five for UW, five for Wazoo. Good stuff, Jake. Thanks for that. All right. The latest from Jerry DePoto, the Mariners GM, was on with Mike Salk this morning. We'll tell you what he had to say next.